This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We seem no longer to appreciate a difference of opinion on matters of policy. Instead, conversations in our communities, online, even in our homes, can lead to heated confrontations. So how are we supposed to talk about our differences when we view the person with a different perspective as evil? That's the topic of a special program this evening when Beyond Civility Project presents I'm Right, You're Evil, a panel discussion with local college students that will address how partisanship has transformed into demonization. Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss that and more, Graydon Law Firm partner Jack Greiner. Welcome, Jack.
Thank you, Michael.
University of Cincinnati School of Criminal Justice Professor Dr. John Paul Wright. Welcome, John.
Hello.
And Xavier University students Ryan Kambick and Tyler Harmon. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks.
All right. And if you have questions or comments for this conversation, or if you want to share a story about how rough things are getting on your own social media feed or at your own kitchen table, give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We will look for some of your comments there. Okay. So there's a panel discussion this evening up in Eden Park. What's it about?
Well, I'll be moderating it, so I guess I'll lead off describing
and,
it.
And you're Jack Greiner from the law firm.
Correct. The Beyond Civility has been around for a number of years. We've done a number of programs, and we started thinking that rather than focus on a specific topic or issue, that a program about how we talk about topics and issues generally would be timely. So the idea being, as we say, I think that the title kind of says it all. And in fact, our flyer says, I'm right, you are wrong, but we cross wrong out and sort of insert evil. And it is that notion of demonization. And how do we deal with that on social media, just in discourse? I think John's going to talk a little bit more detail about some studies that have been done on the topic, right?
Well, go ahead, John. Yeah. Why is a conversation like this necessary?
Well, I think if you look at our body politic today, it's a little, some would say, dysfunctional. But it's important to remember that it's typically been dysfunctional. What's really changed is the level of animosity that is filtered through our relationships, our key relationships between friends, family members, colleague, cohorts. That's really beginning to poison the well, and the data on this are coming through very, very clearly. And we're not quite sure what the end result will be. But when you start down a pathway, sometimes that pathway begins to unfold in ways that you cannot imagine. So I think it's better that we begin to reevaluate the way that we're talking about politics, the way we view people who are not supportive of perhaps our political orientation, and engage them in a way that's direct, and sometimes in a way that's partisan, but is also in a way that recognizes their humanity as individuals.
Well, it used to be that you didn't know who your neighbor was voting for unless they put a campaign sign in their front yard. But now if you're friends with them on social media, if you follow them in some capacity, you might know too much about their politics. Are you finding anything that in terms of the role that social media relationships are playing in this discourse that we're currently experiencing?
Yeah, the research on this is very interesting. When I started reading, I fully thought that social media was the cause and culprit of much of our problems, and I find out that it's not exactly clear the role of social media or media in general. For example, we've seen the sort of the rise of more partisan news types of organizations, and people point the finger at those institutions as well. But it's not clear. It looks like people that are partisan gravitate towards partisan areas, and that makes them even more partisan. And that the extremes, and this is, I think, really the important part, the extremes, which represent maybe 8 to 10% of the left or the right, really are driving the narrative for the rest of us. And that comes through in social media. That comes through in the types of reports that we see or access or seek out in the media as well.
So we brought a couple of college students on because this is a panel that will be featuring college students. So Ryan Kambick, am I saying your name correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
Kambick and Tyler Harmon, you're both students at Xavier. Tyler, you're here to represent a conservative point of view, and correct. Ryan, you're here to represent a liberal perspective. Talk to us, both of you, about college campus living right now. What is it like being on a college campus during this political climate, looking at the view through your political lens?
Being on campus is really it's really eye-opening experience. I'm friends with people like Ryan, who's on the left. I'm friends with some more folks who are on the right. But it's not a big, massive polarization place that I think you hear on the big news sometimes. It's a very intimate sort of place that you can get together and you can talk politics. There are definitely times and people that you can get very heated with. And being in college, I think, is the one opportunity where we have the opportunity to actually express ourselves and look at new ideas and whatnot. And being a part of an area, a group of people on campus that have differing views really allows you to explore not just the ideas out there, but yourself and what you actually believe.
And your thoughts on that, Ryan?
Yes, I certainly agree. A college campus is fundamentally a community, and it's somewhere, it's a shared space that we all have to live in together. And so when we engage in politics, you have to find a way to sort of blunt your approach to politics because a classmate such as Tyler may also be a treasured friend or someone who lives on your floor. And so at the end of the day, it's important because face-to-face politics is done on college campuses. You can't hide on social media necessarily, and certainly things sometimes do get heated or aggressive or whatnot. But at the end of the day, we have to live in the place that we're making. And so I think that sort of shifts the dynamic and makes politics much more palpable at a college level.
And Tyler, I notice you're wearing a flag lapel pin, and I'm only going to point that out because we had the State of the Union address just a few weeks ago, President Donald Trump addressing the nation. And from, I guess, right-wing social media, a lot of pictures were going around showing that, well, sure, these women are wearing white dresses, but you can't find a flag lapel pin among them. So there's this sort of nationalistic antagonization that happens. You can certainly see some of that from the other side as well. Why do you think we now will find something as petty as that to fight over when there are such serious issues plaguing the country? Why do we pinpoint, literally pins, in our current climate?
Well, I think it goes a little bit to the idea of personalization of this thing and demonization. So, I, and Tyler and Ryan's points are interesting in that a lot of the communication on campus is face-to-face. When we step away from that and we start getting into social media, it's not face-to-face. And so it's so much easier sitting behind a screen or holding a device and typing in what you think. You're not looking at the other person's reaction. You're not getting immediate feedback. And I think it does make it a little bit easier, maybe tempting even, to demonize. And then I think once we start down that road, then and we've sort of demonized a person or persons, then we just look for anything that will reinforce that demonization. So, you know, look at that congresswoman who's a socialist, and of course she's not wearing a flag lapel pin. It just proves my point, you know? And so that's where I think it comes from a lot.
Yeah, and that's sort of evolved from the lack of face-to-face. You may recall the early days of email. Maybe you would shoot off an email to someone and think, oh man, I said something I probably wouldn't have said if we were meeting in the office. Yeah. Now we have so many other opportunities and tools to engage in that way, and a lot of us can't seem to control ourselves. 513-419-7100, weigh in on this topic if you like. Also email talk@wvxu.org. Check us out on Facebook or Twitter. We did get a comment that we want to hear from you all whether you can define evil as it's being used in political discussion. I'll give you all a chance to weigh in on that if you'd like.
Well, I think part of the term itself is fuzzy, of course, but we're talking about a process here of singling out individuals or their points of view as less than human, as less than desirable, as perhaps irredeemable, as not worthy of engagement or the basic extension of type of civil politics that we oftentimes want, or at least say we want, but now are less and less inclined to engage in. Identifying somebody, for example, when we see the symbolic representations of evil, right, we automatically are repulsed by it and we want to put them in a corner, walk away, put a boundary around them, and what have you. I think this is what we're trying to get at, is that when we categorize someone as evil, right, for holding opposite views or different views or unfiltered views, if you will, that it sets up a wall that perhaps is unnecessary.
Anybody else want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, I would say that that concept of limits and boundaries is incredibly important to the concept of evil. And that which falls outside those boundaries, I think we can define as evil. But I think the issue, and this goes back to the flag pin, is in the era of social media and sort of immediate communication, politics has become very much a short-term game. Very simple images or a 280-character tweet constitute political thought and consideration nowadays. And so I think the boundaries of what we consider morally acceptable, because we can't give deep consideration to other viewpoints, is very quickly shrinking. And so the viewpoints that fall outside each one of our boundaries and our limits, they're multiplying every day. And so we see more and more, quote, evil in the world because we have such a short-term view.
It seems as though politics and even important policy have been denigrated to sports fandom. I mean, you guys are students at Xavier, so it's like being a Xavier basketball fan and trying to find some reason to put on a University of Cincinnati basketball jersey when they're playing another team. You know, you wouldn't dare do that, but now you find yourself on one side of the political aisle and you wouldn't dare cross over because you're looking to run up the scoreboard. You're looking for these little cheap points to score. Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt, politics has become a team game, and very much, I think, for a lot of people, a spectator sport that we can sit on the side and try to goad or jeer the fans on the other side, and I'm not sure that that's a healthy way to consider ourselves as political actors.
Okay. And I want to make sure that we talk about the president a little bit, because I think that he has a role. Now, the president as a figurehead always has a role, I guess, in national discourse, depending on what tools we have at our disposal to discuss it. But this president in particular, it can be a little more controversial because he's antagonistic. I think I can say that from a point of not being biased as a reporter, but he is an antagonistic person. What role does he play in today's climate, would you say? And let me throw it over to you, Tyler. I think I'd like to hear from you on that.
I think, like you said, the president is a very public figure, and over time has become an even more public figure, not just in like power sense, but in the sense that the State of the Union becomes this national address, not just about the State of the Union, but an agenda. And so President Trump is a new type of president, I think. He's really big on the social media. He's willing to say stuff that is very controversial, and he's really willing to put his name out there on some idea or some issue and be the face of that. And I think it's sort of changed how we look at each other because of that. Going back to the earlier points, you know, with the social media and everything, when some people are willing to put out a tweet, you know, but face-to-face are not willing to say something like that, Donald Trump, I think, is a little different, where he's willing to tweet it but also say it. And so I think the whole dynamic is changing, and I think part of what the problem is, everyone's trying to – how do we go about this change, or trying to stop that change, just because he is a little bit different of a president that we've seen from the past.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're discussing how hard it is to have a discussion when there's so much anger directed at one another over our political beliefs. We're speaking with Graydon law firm partner Jack Greiner, University of Cincinnati School of Criminal Justice professor Dr. John Paul Wright, and Xavier University students Ryan Kambick and Tyler Harmon, 513-419-7100, if you'd like to weigh in. Andrew is on the line. He has a question or comment. Go ahead, Andrew.
All right, thanks for taking my call. How's everybody doing?
We're doing fine, Andrew. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I mean, it seems like no matter what side of the political divide your panelists are on, we all seem to agree here that everything in politics has been reduced down to just yell at each other without any nuance type game. You know, like if I make a comment online saying I'm in support of universal health care, I immediately have people call me a socialist and that I must hate capitalism. It's like, no, actually, I'm not a socialist. I don't hate capitalism. In fact, capitalism is the only reason why we can afford such good things, such as universal health care. You know, I'm a Second Amendment supporter. I support the military, but I also happen to support some left-wing liberal policies. You know, I'm an independent. It's like people have forgotten about the nuance in politics. And it seems like it's spurred on by the leaders in politics who want to play this game to score political points. And it's just an endless circle of, you know, people wanting to get down each other's throats without actually hearing each other.
Andrew, great comment. Appreciate the call very much. And that's kind of what we were just talking about. I mean, he touched on the sporting event aspect of it all.
Yeah, I think that to me, we go right by because it's complicated and it's difficult to talk about the specific issue and name whatever issue it is. And it is easier to just go to, you know, the ad hominem, the attack on the person making the argument is a lot easier. You can do it in 280 characters a lot easier than actually going through the any details or nuance. I will respectfully say Tyler's giving the president a little bit of a pass there to say he's just different. I think he has degraded the office by his tweets. I don't say that lightly, but I do think that, and I say this partially from what I do, which is represent a lot of media, but I think the idea of saying the media is the enemy of the people and fake news, and then you turn around at his rallies, most recently in El Paso, where a cameraman was attacked by, and that is not an unusual or unique occurrence. The media gets harassed quite frequently, and I cannot see how that's acceptable on any level, and I think it has normalized a kind of discourse that is unprecedented and unwise.
And now's a good time to note that Jack has also represented Cincinnati Public Radio and First Amendment cases, along with the Cincinnati Inquirer and other local media outlets. Let's go back to the phones. We have Ian on the line. What's on your mind? Hey, Ian, are you with us?
Yes, I'm there.
All right, go ahead.
I'm not here on the point of to attack the media. I think that's already been covered an awful lot. What I think is more important is that with this in mind, and I think all of us kind of understand that the media is not necessarily on our side, and it is causing a divide, but we're not talking to each other anymore. We're not talking about the points. people are not listening to each other enough. I come from the point of I want to talk to my peers and understand exactly why it is that they feel the way they do. And even though they know that I don't necessarily agree with what they're saying, they don't want to talk to me because they want to label me as being, oh, well, you know, you must be against gun control. Well, I'd like to know what you think about this, but it's gotten to the point now where nobody wants to talk to each other. And I think that's crazy.
Well, we appreciate you calling in and talking to us, Ian, and we're definitely listening and appreciate that feedback very much. And we'll talk about that now. He's got a point, right? I mean,
yeah, he does have a point. And I think it goes to the erosion of trust in our society. In order to have difficult conversations where points of view are shared, honestly, you have to be able to trust that the individual will engage with you in good faith and will not, say, exploit it through social media later to score points or what have you. And there's good reason why people are now much more cautious. An offhanded comment, a side joke, something poorly articulated or stated can now be sent to millions of people instantaneously. And in return, you get mobbed literally by thousands and thousands of strangers for a simple comment, an offhanded statement, or what have you. So that erosion of trust that we're negotiating or dealing with is coming from anonymity on social media, but also having everything about our lives exposed as well. So you have this parallel universe there where we can be anonymous and entirely open. We've not negotiated those boundaries, but getting back to the point of trust, and I think these gentlemen, you know, show that very well. You can actually still be friends with people with whom you disagree. And what we're creating now is a society of partisans where we actively avoid this, partly out of fear.
And in our final couple of minutes, I want to give Ryan and Tyler the opportunity to talk about what do you see as the role that university students can play in this in your own campus communities?
So for one, I think campuses themselves offer an important place where politics can be done, right? Much of our politics is done online or you know, over the airwaves. But campuses bring people together in a physical space wherein A, you have to live, and B, you have to converse meaningfully. And I think that is incredibly important to our discourse, and building up that social trust in sort of a communal setting opens up our politics and opens up our minds to possibilities and to consideration that social media and short-term politics doesn't really allow us to.
And Tyler?
Yeah, I agree with Ryan there. But I also think you can sort of extend it past just the campus alone, especially with the young people. I think politics nowadays for a while has been sort of this older person's game. And I do think it's something to do with the leaders and the way they talk with each other, the way they sort of distrust each other. That sort of trickles down to future generations. So I think like on college campuses, even high school students, you know, you're young. Be willing to be passionate about what you believe in, your causes, your beliefs, your values. But don't be willing just to hate someone or disagree with them just because you're not like them, you know. Be willing to open yourself up to new ideas. I've heard things from Ryan, you know, I never would have thought of before. I'm sure he's heard things from me that he may have not thought of.
Absolutely.
But we're willing to talk to each other, listen to each other, and it's not about whether we're a Democrat or Republican or liberal or conservative. It's, you know, we care about this country, you know, places that we live. And the only way we're going to get past or do anything about it is by coming together and talking about it, not by yelling at each other about it.
You know, when I was a teenager, the only thing people cared about on the internet was this animated dancing baby. Those were the good days. And I'm really sorry about the world we're leaving, you guys. Beyond Civilities, I'm Right, Your Evil Forum is this evening at the Cincinnati Art Museum in Eden Park. Reception and registration starts at 5:30, and the panel discussion is from 6 to 7:30. The event is free, but reservations are requested. Jack, John, Ryan, and Tyler, thank you all for joining us today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our program can be found online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.